White House sources are telling reporters the U.S. will ban Russian oil imports. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The White House tells us that President Biden will hold a briefing on sanctions in under an hour now, and the news agency Reuters is among published reports indicating the U.S. will ban the import of Russian oil. This is a mainstay of the Russian economy, and Americans already paying a lot of money for energy will pay still more. Crude oil traded in New York is up 5.3% now, $125 a barrel and change, the highest since the summer of 2008. Jeffrey Cleveland in Los Angeles is chief economist at the investment firm Payton & Riegel, and he's been going through charts of how much of our income we pay in energy. Jeffrey, welcome back.
Good morning, David.
I mean, it's a watershed moment if this is what the administration does in less than an hour. And hate to mention it, but my reporters have been reminding me that whenever you get an energy shock, you tend to get a recession soon after.
Well, it's true that a sharp rise in energy prices tends to be coincident, at least, with a recession. But not all recessions are caused by energy price spikes, David. So some other culprits often are at play.
Yeah, remember 2008. Gasoline was going through the roof, summer of 2008, and the mortgage meltdown was gathering steam, and they're not, you know, closely related. All right, so it doesn't have to follow, but of course, that's got to be a key question we're all asking, is this going to slow down the economy here?
Well, I think the way to frame it is to look at the share of spending consumers are forking over to energy, whether it's energy goods, energy services, as a share of all their spending, and just see how much energy is biting out of that. So right now we're at about 4.2% of all of our expenditures going to energy. Now, how does that compare to 2008? That figure was closer to 6.6%, David. So it might be cold comfort for some when they pull up to the gas pump and they see the price right now, but it's taking less of a bite out of their spending than it was in 2008. And if I can go further back, it is well below the peak that we saw in the late 1970s and the 1980s, where almost 10% of spending was going to energy services and goods.
Yeah, but with these expected new sanctions, you know, you see the direction of prices, and we could get to, like it was in 2008, level of spending on energy, right? I mean, it's like that could just be some weeks away.
We could. It's something to watch. I think that's the critical question. At which point or at what point does the consumer break? I don't think we're at that point yet, David. If you think about Friday's or last week's jobs report, and you look at consumer incomes, if what we like to do is we look at how many people are employed, how many hours do they work, how much money do they earn, and gross income was growing at about a 12% year-on-year rate through February, David. So that's very good news because that means that the consumer, broadly speaking, can shoulder some of the burden of higher costs here without a recession necessarily following. But the risks are much higher than they were just a few months ago.
Jeffrey Cleveland is the chief economist at the investment firm Payton & Riegel in Los Angeles. Thank you very much.
Have a great week.
The Biden administration has long been working on America's plan for cryptocurrencies, given how crypto is both the future of finance and at the same time money laundering on a stick. Well, the Associated Press is now reporting the White House is ready to announce its views on cryptocurrencies' abuses, uses, and regulation, a plan with added urgency given that digital currencies could help Russia avoid sanctions for waging war on Ukraine. The price of nickel used in rechargeable batteries, stainless steel, and more has surged 250% over the past 2 days to above $100,000 a ton. Now, that forced the London Metal Exchange today to halt trading and possibly for the next several days. Some of this is a backlog caused by all the bets that the price of the metal would go down, what is called a short squeeze, and the need to clear those contracts could take days. Marketplace's Victoria Craig has more from London.
The severe price swings in nickel contracts are evidence, the exchange says, of the effects the war in Ukraine is having on the market. Though the exchange didn't give additional information, the Financial Times and others have suggested nickel's move higher could be a result of a short squeeze. That's when a big player in the market bets the price of something, in this case nickel, will fall. But instead, when the price rises, that player is forced to buy more in order to stave off big losses. Dominic Schneider, head of commodities at UBS Wealth Management, says it's not outside the realm of possibility that we could see trading stoppages on other commodities as the war continues.
I think it would be cautious to see this happening. Other bigger metals, let's say copper, but I think more smaller ones, similar situation could happen. It's not a good sign that these price behaviors can materialize.
Schneider said this is early evidence of the real consequences of Western policies against Russia. Oil prices have also seen a sharp move higher in the last 2 weeks. Russia's deputy prime minister warned they could even more than double current levels to $300 a barrel if an oil embargo is enacted. Schneider, though, said he sees a $150 price tag more likely. In London, I'm the BBC's Victoria Craig for Marketplace.
Now to workplace culture, dress codes, and local economies. The stories from the state of Maine, a business to supply demand from women for hijabs. Here's Maine Public Radio's Ari Snyder.
In the small coastal town of Biddeford, Isra Anon opens her handbag and gently pulls out three hijabs.
So I brought three different colors.
They are samples from her clothing startup, Muhara Collection, that she launched with a friend last year.
Very light, very soft, goes with everything.
Up until recently, Anon was on an entirely different career track, working as a dental assistant, a job she was initially excited about. But not long after she started, she says her employers asked if she would replace her hijab with a surgical hat and a smaller head covering underneath. Anon says she agreed at first, wanting to fit in.
But then I started realizing this is not who I am.
So after several months at the clinic, she put in her notice and opened the store with a friend. They began importing hijabs from Turkey, selling them for $7 each. It didn't take long to find customers, like Tabarik Alabudi.
I've never bought a hijab in person until actually Isra opened her Muhara collection.
And Anon is now running into more and more people wearing her fashion lines.
And I saw some girls, they were like, oh, we're wearing your hijab. I was like, this is cute. This is so nice.
Anon is tapping into a Muslim customer base that has long been underserved by the mainstream fashion industry, says Lauren DeVita, an apparel merchandising professor at Baylor University. DeVita says the modest fashion industry is growing rapidly in the U.S. It includes clothing like hijabs, long dresses, modest swimwear for people of various religious beliefs.
Because at this point, it is not saturated with entrants. It's growing because it has been underserved to this point.
She says that means there's still plenty of room for small-scale entrepreneurs with connections to their communities to grow. In Portland, Maine, I'm Ari Snyder for Marketplace.
And the Inspector General at the U.S. Department of Transportation is set to review some new regs for, wait for it, flying taxis and other automated vehicles to ferry people and packages in the air above cities. Here's the line from the department's Inspector General that all this presents, quote, new and complex safety challenges. Our producers are Rose Conlon, Meredith Gerritsen, Stephen Ryan, Alex Schroeder, and Erica Soderstrom. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. We're all from APM, American Public Media.